Hey, welcome to Angelarium Update, the podcast where we talk to you about stuff that's going on with Angelarium every week. I'm Pete Moorbacher.
I'm Elaine Ryan.
I'm Matt Gerard.
Hey, Matt Gerard is with us today.
You may I'm actually here.
From such moments as when you have a problem with your order and I tell you to email Matt Gerard.
That's what I do.
He's a nice guy, too.
I try.
So Matt runs the moorbacherart@gmail.com. email address, and so whenever someone has a problem with an order, or if they are trying to reach out to me, I have this email address where it all gets filtered through my assistant, and so he gets it all. And now, like, we're having him on because he's gonna read through some of the stuff that's been coming into the email, and Elaine's gonna read through some of the stuff that's coming into the Discord, and we're gonna talk to you guys about what's happening this week in Angelarium. So why don't we just kick it off with, like, Matt, what are people emailing me about?
A lot of stuff. Last week was basically all Patreon stuff with that whole Patreon goof. It's starting to, thin out from that now. That actually, we were talking about it earlier this week, like, that actually didn't go as terribly as I think we thought it was going to. People have been really understanding and, like, just sort of, like, asking, like, am I good? Am I good? So as long as, everyone's got their caps set, you pretty much explained it all in the Patreon updates and stuff. So that was sort of the majority of stuff for last week, and then trickling into this week. And then people emailing about, the Kickstarter and the updates for the books. That's really, like, what the majority of stuff is every week. Just wondering how the book's doing and everything.
Yeah,
where's the book?
Well, I'm gonna address both those things real quick. Number one, the Patreon thing. There's, like, you were telling me there's a bunch of people who are like, oh my god, I feel so bad for you. How can I, like, donate to help? And the answer
is, people are asking if they could, like, donate to your PayPal or, like, whatever. And I was like, no, you don't have to do that.
No, okay. Yeah, the answer is don't do that. Like, you guys are already donating by being Patreon.
Backers.
Yeah.
So I want to tell all those people who are concerned, everything's fine. I am sorting out what is turning out to be, like, a procedural billing issue with what is about a dozen people. And once that's cleared up, it's fine. Like, it's just something I need to stay in closer communication with those people with. And this whole thing is running really well because of the support of those people. You know, if you're reaching out like this, you are basically, you're already beyond in our good graces. You're doing amazing. And thank you so much for your support. And you don't need to do anything extra. Like, this isn't a crisis. It just freaked us out. With the book thing, I gotta tell you, every day of my life, the weight of that book not being finished gets a little heavier. And with that pressure,
sure it does.
The potential for progress on it gets a little bit more likely every single time. So I'm gonna have more of an update. I'm doing the monthly updates. I did mine for this month already a couple weeks ago, and there's gonna be another update a couple weeks from now. I'm only publishing them on Kickstarter because that's where people can get refunds and stuff. I got an email from someone today asking why the heck their order for a book didn't ship. And I'm like,
There's a lot of those. I get those every day.
Yes. I did my best to try to communicate that it was a pre-order. The name of the product has the word pre-order in it, and there's descriptions about what the pre-order entails. And there's also a tag on the image that says pre-order.
Yeah.
And I think that that we're doing too good of a job making the store look like a real store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And people are expecting it to work like Amazon, and it doesn't. And that's fair.
Yeah.
But you know what we learned?
Mm.
Never ever doing a pre-order again. Without the book being finished.
The third book is going to be finished before the Kickstarter launches, so this isn't going to be an issue going forwards. The chances that there's going to be a pre-order sometime in the future is basically 100%. Like, if there's, like, a jewelry launch, then we're going to take pre-orders because we need to know how big of a run that needs to be, right?
Right.
So, same thing with the book. It's like, before we do a big run of something brand new that's experimental, we're going to do pre-orders for it, and we'll be taking it through, like, a Kickstarter or through the website or a combination of the two, and we are going to do our damnedest to try to communicate the status of that. The book has been out of stock for so long that that's become a bit of an issue, and we're just trying to troubleshoot those individually so that, people, anybody who complains about that has the option to just, like, oh, you did, we're sorry that that didn't come across. You can have your money back or you can wait. Like, and the refund process is pretty instant. And it even shows up on my phone. I get to see updates when people get their money back. And I get to see every day, like, I'm like, oh, Matt's doing customer service because I see all these charges going on in my credit card. And so, like, yeah, that's it. We have this thing run in a way where the money from the campaign is intact, so that if anyone needs a refund, it doesn't strain the finances of the project, and it's totally doable to do instantly. Yeah, feel free to get one of those if you really want one, or if you want the book, stick around and wait. I'm going to keep updating on a monthly basis what the progress is, and that progress is about to speed up next month by a lot.
Yeah, every time, go ahead, Elaine.
Oh, I was just going to say, and those that are waiting, I really appreciate you guys for waiting with us.
Yeah, for sure. Every time someone emails and asks about, you know, how come my books haven't shipped or whatever, I always link them back to your updates on Kickstarter. So, you know, if they want to follow along what's going on, like, they can. So a few people have, like, emailed back, like, I didn't back the Kickstarter. Like, does this apply to me? And I'm like, yeah, of course. Like, yeah, it's the same book. So, yeah, regardless if you back the Kickstarter or not, like, those updates are a good way to keep up with, you know, where the book's at and how things are going. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you're listening to a podcast and me talking about it is evidence that I'm trying to keep the door open so that people can poke their head in and see the progress on everything. And it's not where I want it to be. I think that that's pretty clear that the estimate of delivery on this book was a lot sooner, and it's not here. And so that's evidence that I've made some sort of mistake, and I'm definitely not beyond admitting that. But what the response to this mistake is me trying to fix it and do better and get this thing out in its due time without rushing it. And rather than continue to break estimated delivery dates, I've instead just tried to open the door on what is being done any given month so that you can see the book coming together bit by bit, the same way that I'm seeing it come together bit by bit. And the next 2 weeks, I'm going to be on the road. First, I'm going to be in a LuxCon in Pennsylvania. It's like a conference for illustrators where we get to look at a bunch of hot original paintings and also go to talks and talk to each other. It's a stop I make every single year, and as a matter of like a professional investment in my community. And then after that, Elaine and I are going to be in LA for Stan Lee's LA Comic Con, and that is going to prevent me. I'm going to get Sagittarius done, and that's basically going to be it for me for productivity for the month. And then next month, I am so ready to start busting ass on that book. Like, next month, I am going to try to take care of the majority of the remaining work on the book in that month, because I have nothing else planned, and I am besides the workshop, which is, I think, 1 week. So the other 3 weeks, I have very focused dedication to getting that done. So keep an eye out for the update in November to see some big chunk of that book get done and be me happily announcing bigger progress.
Woohoo!
That's me saying it out loud. All right, Elaine, what we got coming in from the community?
Well, I just got another message from Avi, if you don't hear me clicking and copy and pasting.
Yeah.
But, so actually we have 3 questions from Avi this week.
First one. He's a cool guy.
He is a sweet, good dude. I would like to ask Pete on the next podcast about a possible book list that can be made so we can dig deeper into the Angelarium lore. So, like, just basically angel books.
Oh.
Any angel books you recommend, or like specific Google searches. Okay. People are really interested in kind of hearing more about the lore, like where you find these lore.
This is definitely something we should address. Okay, there are no books that I know of. I don't read books about angels. The way that I got into it was a website called sarasarchangels.com, which doesn't exist anymore, and when I want to go look stuff up on it, I have to use the Internet Archive, the Internet Wayback Machine. And it was just like this huge repository of angel names and properties sorted in a bunch of different ways. And the reason I liked that was because, it was like the one website I knew, but with a lot of the angel stuff, you're not finding a lot of mythology, and you're not finding a lot of references to mythological books or biblical books that where you hear about the deeds or properties of angels. Typically it's like a brief blurb and a name and a property. And most of them are just like, here's the name of the angel. This is what they're angel of. And I was really drawn to the sparseness of it because I wanted to take the concept that they represented and I wanted to personify it. So I wanted to bring my own associations to it and bring my own, build my own mythology on top of the whatever the angel represents, because that's where I'm interested in this project, is to make sort of personal personifications of the different concepts and experiences in my life. And that's the root of Angelarium. So if there was a larger mythology, and if somebody else had built a larger mythology, like, me reading that runs the risk of me moving away from my own honest interpretation of these themes and into me just sort of trying to reflect some existing expectation that's out there. So I've personally avoided it. There's a few things you can go out and find if you Google it up, but mostly I'm trying to find what are the most, when I'm looking for angel names, I'm trying to find multiple resources that agree on what the angel represents and what the most common spellings are. And once I get past that point, all of my research has to do with me researching the themes and thinking back on my own memories and experiences and not actually looking into the mythology. With the exception of the Emanations, where I did read like a Kabbalah for Beginners book. And Eli did an extensive amount of research prior to doing his original designs. So that's the one exception to that, because there is an extensive amount of thought and research that goes specifically into the themes and associations behind the Emanations without having, since they're not personified, you know, they don't run the risk of having like these very specific mythologies about them, but instead being, you know, more of a reflection of the human experience than a mythological character. So that's why that's why the research around them is different. That's the explanation.
Awesome.
The end.
Go on, Matt.
Oh, I said cool. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Another question for the podcast from Avi. If the $75 tier gets filled up to 100 people, does that mean no one else can buy the limited edition prints?
My plan is to cap it at 50. I'm going to accept 50 pre-orders through Patreon, and then I'm going to have 50 copies that are going to be sold through the website. And if the demand begins to reach past that, rather than I have a choice of either extending the runs or raising the price. And my first line of attack will be a incremental rising of price. We're already kind of getting there because we have like 30 something people at the $75 tier right now. And we're getting there. We got room for about a dozen or a little bit more before I am going to cap the number of $75 backers, and then people will only be able to join once other people leave. And then the other 50 copies will be sold through the website on a first come first serve basis once a piece launches. Libra, it's like the newest piece in the store, Libra, is already in like the high 60s as far as being sold through. So, you know, like the recent releases for the Zodiac are beginning to get to the point where that's starting to get dangerous. And it's really exciting. Like, I've been thinking a lot about what happens when we get to this point. I want these things to be rare. I want them to be exclusive. I want people to take care of them and potentially see value in reselling them if they're, you know, rare and in demand. And I haven't seen a lot of reselling happening, but I do have a lot of inquiries from people trying to buy older pieces. So if anybody is holding on to any of those older ones, you know, you may actually be able to reach out back into the community and find someone to buy it at a higher price than you paid for it.
This is actually a perfect segue into the next question.
Sure.
So Avi's third question was, what determines the monetary value of a piece of art / collection as time goes by? And does Pete believe that the art he has sold already will increase in value?
The price is a lot of experimentation. I started at the price, I got to the price that I was at because it was, I was at first emulating a price of a friend of mine who got me introduced to making limited editions, and then I raised it a little bit as I found that my costs were a little higher than theirs. So I raised the price to account for the margins that I needed to get off them. And I've kind of kept it there because I've just been afraid to break something that's working. I played around with like the... At first I was doing the alternate editions at a higher price because I was doing them in smaller runs. But because they are not signed by the artist, because the artists are sort of scattered all over the world, I decided like, what if on this time around we made the F Angel of Anger like limited or alternate edition like just a little bit more affordable to see like would that mean that that run would sell through quickly and it would be another cool rare item rather than this sort of, you know, I was worried about the contributor art feeling off brand, like a sort of knockoff piece of the merchandise sitting in the store, and it's like I want it to be a special, exciting event when a contributor adds an interesting new piece to the collection. And so the price is meant to try to like motivate the run to sell out quickly, and it's actually been selling amazing. Lee did an incredible job, and like I really like that piece, but I had no idea how people were going to respond to it because I've only ever done, you know, sold pieces from contributors a couple other times. And those have been small runs, and they haven't sold through after a decent amount of time. Like, they've been sort of trickling out, and they're both getting really low, but I didn't want this one to stick around that long. So that one ended up at a lower price. And then when I do a larger print, I calculate the dollar per square inch, and I have it be the same dollar per square inch as as the standard size prints. And that's where the prices come from there. At first, like, we were trying to eyeball it, but it's so hard to judge.
Yeah.
So we broke it down on a purely mathematical level. But once if the demand begins to outstrip the supply on these, rather than continuing to, like, increase the supply, I'd really rather just try to make them more valuable, not just for me, but for the resale, because there are some of the most popular pieces out there. There's only like 25 copies. And mm-hmm. I know that like there was a time where like I had a Bezaliel Angel of Shadows print that came back for some reason. And it had been sold out and there was high demand for it, but it was off the store. And I relisted it for like $30 more than it originally sold. And it sold it the same day at a higher price. So I was like, okay, well, if that works for me, it's going to work for somebody else. Like, mm-hmm. Even though $75 is sort of this baseline price, I could see some of these reselling for, you know, a couple hundred or a few hundred dollars to the right buyer. That there's not, like, you're not going to see these listed, the prices listed on any kind of, like, auction sites or anything. Like, there's Christie's is not reselling these things. So the value of them is really up to how much someone's willing to pay for them, and I can tell you it's more than $75.
Or any
of them that are sold out, the amount that someone's willing to pay to get a hold of one of these is higher than the original purchase price. And I don't think people have really realized that. I really think that that's kind of gone under the radar. Like, everyone, I'm not someone that people are buying for the purpose of collecting for the most part. People are buying to hang in their homes because they're a fan of the work. So without speculators mixed in, there hasn't been an effort to buy and resell the way you see with, like, the Mondo prints. But I have tried to do my best to make these prints durable and archival so that they can be sold like that should that demand ever come up, which feels like it's right around the corner, if not quietly under the surface already. So, yeah, that's it. What was the other question here about the...
There's another one that I'm going to do Truman Black's first.
Okay.
How does Pete get his inspiration in such a short amount of time with 1 to 2 paintings a month?
Oh, this totally pivots off of that question from right at the beginning. Like, I do the research. And the research comes from me trying to associate my own personal, like, memories and experiences back to whatever the theme is. So I think if anybody thinks about a specific concept or idea. Like, I'm working on Sagittarius right now, and it's about wanderlust and a desire to sort of depart from society and see the grandeur of the natural world. Like, anybody who, if you think about that concept, you're going to think of your own symbolism, your own visuals to associate with it. I don't think that that's a taxing process. So when it comes to inspiration, it really has more to do with me trying to figure out what the themes of the piece are going to be, and then spending time working to see, like, when I do a drawing, I don't know whether or not it's a good drawing until it's done. I look at what's on the page, I judge what's on the page, rather than trying to judge the idea that's in my head. And so the inspiration in a lot of cases is me having an idea, putting it down, and then sifting through the parts of it to try to find what's working and what's broken, and replacing all the broken pieces so that I can get it done over the course of a week or 2 weeks. When I have a design that's already finished, like if I'm re-illustrating a character, like that gets cut down to basically nothing and I just need to execute on it. I could do one of those in a week without a problem. It's when I have to sort of sift through like what's working and what isn't about a painting or a character design that I, it takes me, you know, 2 weeks to a month to get that done.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways in which I'm going to be able to do two paintings a month moving forwards is like, I'm thinking about doing a new character every month and then having another one that is like an alternate painting of an existing character or group of characters where I don't need to do concept design for every single new painting, which is what I've been doing on top of the paintings themselves.
Group angel painting.
Yeah. So like I'll be doing my own, I've done repeats of existing angels before. Like there was the original 12 and then I've re-illustrated them like 3 times. And so the ones that you're used to seeing is like the 3rd time it's come around. Like I really want to take, not just have them be like a refreshed, updated, like cleaned up painting, but to have like a totally original new illustration using some of these established characters from this mythology. And that doesn't require me to work as intensely on that stuff. It requires me to be a painter, but not a, you know, an inventor or, you know, concept artist.
So, yeah. Excellent. Awesome.
I told you guys I wouldn't be able to stop my dog from barking on the podcast. I'm sorry.
I don't know if it picked up.
Oh, it didn't pick up? Oh, okay, good. UPS is here, so he's barking really loud.
Nope, I can't hear a thing.
All right, Yay. Elaine, what we got next?
All right, the last one is going to be from Sparta Dog. Sparta's requesting a story symbol analysis for a different angel every episode, potentially. He's nominating either Kokamiel or Barakiel for this one. I'll let you pick.
Kokamiel, because like that was one of the recent legacy prints. So a lot of you are about to get a Kokamiel print. So Kokamiel was very specifically related back to an experience I had. I went to Burning Man, and that's the worst way to start a story. But the prior to getting into Burning Man, one of the things you need to do is wait in a multi-mile-long traffic jam out in the middle of the desert in the middle of the night. And that was an incredible experience, because I'm just like, at a certain point, I've ridden from San Francisco down to Black Rock City, my knees pressed against my shoulders in the back of a van that's overloaded, and I like have all the gears pushed back so far, I'm traveling in the fetal position to be able to make space. And so I finally get to get out there and walk around, and it was my first time getting to see the stars without light pollution. And my impression of it was like this ocean of light that was crashing down against this dark horizon out in the desert. No mountains or anything. Flat, dark horizon. And I just see this little bit of light on the ground, and then there's this giant tapestry of waves of stars just smashing in, like the Milky Way just smashing into this dark horizon. And I'm just like, that's fucking amazing.
It's incredible to see it. It's,
Yeah, and anybody who's seen it knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, instantly associated the stars in their purest state as being like this ocean. And so I needed to have the character in the ocean, because that's how I was seen. That is like the natural space where those stars existed. It was like And the stars themselves are not just points of light, but I've actually painted them with waves of color, which is really how my memory is of seeing the stars in that space. So I wanted the theme of that character to really be about someone who has sort of lost sense of where they are in the world due to their amazement at like the grandeur of the world around them. And so like this character is kind of getting swallowed up by the ocean and not even noticing because they're so distracted by this dramatic display above them. And, you know, thematically within the mythology, I think of Kukabiel as someone who is so entranced by the possibilities for the future and what, you know, future can be seen in the stars, and that the potential of everything that you know, he's ignored the problems that are happening right at his feet. And so it's like this mixture of being optimistic for this beacon of hope in the future, but totally not addressing the real problems that need to happen, you know, that need to be addressed right there in that moment at home. And I felt like that was on top of my real experiences, like seeing the stars in that space. I really felt like that was something that I could relate to, that I've seen in the world. And that was important. So one of the original things that was going to be included was that he was going to have like a astrolabe or something that was like falling apart, I mean, out of his hand. But I think you can see it in some of the earlier versions if you go back to the works in progress, and it kind of ended up dropping away because it was this supplementary element that wasn't building on the composition as a whole. And I focused more on the symbols and design elements that were supporting the main themes at the expense of trying to do something more complex with more random elements mixed in.
I like it. I like it a lot. Yeah.
There's stories behind every one of them. So yeah, I guess we should probably do a different one each week, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think that makes it more fun. So yeah, those are our community questions at this moment.
I hope
the fantastic crew over there. As a sidebar to all of our people suffering from hurricanes and fires in LA, I just want to I hope you're all safe.
Yeah.
And secure. There's been a lot of talk about craziness happening in the Discord chat, and I just want to send some love.
Hey guys, stay safe.
Yeah. Sounds like a bad time basically everywhere right now.
The world's on fire and drowning.
It was funny, you know, Miss V was saying like she was pulling a card from the Oracle deck to see how things were about to go for the future. And she pulled the Sandalphon, Angel of New Life. And she's like, oh, look at this. It's Sandalphon. Isn't that nice? And I was like, that's not my read on it. Like, Sandalphon is not about, like, oh, look at all this optimistic great hope for the future. Look at these new, you know, beautiful little boys. Like, Sandalphon, I mean, I've got two kids. And so that's kind of why I wanted the theme of this to have these two sort of younger forms, like, I think of like Sandalphon existing sort of right off the shores of where, you know, the Driftwood Cathedral is, like where Asriel lives, like these two angels living very close to each other, you know, life and death, like right on the verge of each other. And new life and new growth is a tumultuous thing. Anyone who's had kids knows like how painful and frustrating an experience it can be to have something new happen like that. And so I thought about that and I was like, you know, that really feels appropriate because it feels like we're going through challenging times right now, but we're going through challenging times with the hope of building towards something better. And that's what that piece is about. I mean, we're getting a twofer here, but
I know, I was going to say getting a twofer.
that's what that piece is about. And it really does feel like we're going through really challenging times right now. There's a lot of people I know that are going through really challenging times. And it's not the sign that anything is going wrong. It's the sign of any kind of change. These challenging times are an essential part of our lives, and it may not feel good, but it's an important part of our lives, and it's gonna be hard, And that's something that we're all just going to have to accept and make our best choices, you know, within those circumstances and hope for the best, because, you know, there's something new coming into the world, and we don't know what that thing is going to be yet, but we're going to find out, and we're going to do our best to make the most out of it. So,
yeah.
Keep with it, you guys. Hold strong. Stay close to the people that support you. You know, Angelarium's a little community, but like everybody has their own communities in their lives. Like that's where we all draw our best strength from. So, for those of you who are going through challenging times, I hope that if you got any extra love to give to people around you, that you help prop up the people in your life that you're seeing or having hard times, because yeah, lots of stuff. We're talking a lot. Speaking of which, I mean, we're talking about what we're going to do for charity stuff for this year, December, like last couple of years, like I was doing like holiday sales and things were going off the rails, like just trying to like fill orders and take care of business and keep on top of stuff in the light of the holidays. And this year, now that I have more help with me, now that I have two people here to like dip in and help out with the organization of stuff, I want to do a charity event, and we're trying to figure out what the scope of that thing is, but we're going to, at the very least, have some special items that are going to be up for a limited time where the money from those are going to go to specific charity causes. We're going to communicate about that more because we don't know exactly like what we're capable of. I want to do it to the biggest degree we can afford to do in terms of our bandwidth. And we don't know what that is yet. And I'm going to wait until after we're done with a whole shitload of travel. And then Aline and I are going to talk about what's going to go into it.
I'm already starting a lot of research on this stuff, figuring some stuff out.
Worst case scenario is we're going to launch some special edition prints and mats where the money from those is going to 100% of the money from those, not just the profit, but all the income.
Yeah, all of it.
Is going to, and then my contribution is going to be all of the cost to get these things made and fulfilled. And the money from those is going to go towards a cause, and we're going to be communicating very specifically about that and promoting it as a larger event around December, so that if people want to do charitable giving but also get something out of it, you can get something rare and cool from us while also helping people out in the world. Because, hey, this is a big platform these days, and like I have the ability to actually help people in tangible ways now.
Which is
exciting. Collective help of all of you guys, so it feels like this huge, massive waste not to do something about it, not to do something with it. So that's a plan for the future.
I've been excited about this. I've been looking forward to seeing what this turns into. So,
just got a lot of research to do to make sure I get it right.
I gotta finish this damn book. Oh my god! Like this is like this is what I mean when like everything cool that I want to do is kind of held back by the book production. Thankfully, Elaine cannot help with the book. So because she can't help with the book, that means that she can work on, whenever she's tasked to work on something, that it doesn't make the book production go slower. It's great.
Yep. I've got your back, Pete.
There's one more thing I want to talk about. I can't remember now.
Well, it's all right. We've gone over again.
Oh, wait, I know. So that new F, Angel of Anger painting that Lee did, guys, it's doing better on Twitter and Instagram than any painting I've ever made. I just wanted to share that like, apparently, like, I managed to hire someone who made, like, more popular art than me, and Lee has been working in studios, like at game studios, as an art director for years, and has been playing around with the idea of going independent. And now he's got this like huge permission slip to go ahead and invest in himself because he's outperforming me on my own home turf. It's incredible.
That's awesome.
So I'm really excited for him. I'm looking forward to it. I've been excited about, like, I've been watching what he's been doing and seeing this cool stuff, and I'm like, oh, maybe I can get a piece of that. And that's why I hired him to work on this. And I'm really, really happy with how it worked out. And now it's, like, beyond that. Now Lee Dodson might be producing more art and putting more stuff into the world. And he doesn't have anything. I'm not able to promote anything he's working on, like, if you like his art, like, you might want to pick up this AF print, because I'm only making 50 of them, and they're cheap, so they're going to go. But Oh, and if you're hearing this, you have a discount code. Look up the last time I delivered digital rewards, and there's a discount code. Like, the $10 and up gets 20% off, and then everybody else gets 10% off. So I've been seeing people using the codes a lot.
Yeah, and for those of you that are lost at finding the code, I'm here for you, buddy.
Oh, yeah. No, Lean will be able to help you out. So keep that in mind.
Awesome. Well, congrats to that app doing well.
Yeah, congrats to Lee. I'm so super excited. Like, one last
thing. It's a beautiful painting.
I get so stressed out on release day. Release day is like whenever I post a new painting and I make it for sale in the store and all that kind of stuff. Like, I get so stressed out. And Matt, you've been started doing your own business with your pins.
Oh yeah, it's so stressful.
It's stressful to the point of being like physically uncomfortable. It really kind of hurts.
Yeah.
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 I didn't get any of that releasing Lee's print. Doing the release day for Lee, it was just like, oh, I get to just celebrate the win of somebody else without being worried whether or not like it's a reflection of my own personal value. That was great. So the fact that we've got like a alternate art that's doing really well and it's doing good things for Lee and it's low stress for me means that like I've been contacting some people about doing some more contributor work. And now I'm feeling even more, I'm feeling better excited about it. Yeah, more excited for it now with this feeling like a really good win and like being. And then, Matt, you're going to have some new pins coming out soon. You're just like waiting on some cards, right? And like pre-orders are up on your site right now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pre-orders are up, tryhardpins.com.
Yeah. If you like
yeah.
Mega Man Legends, Matt Gerard's got your back.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited about them. The pins are all in. I'm just waiting on the backing cards to get here. I have a shipment of 2,000 clear bags showing up tomorrow. So it's gonna be a fun day of packing pins for like a week because there's a lot of pins.
Did the backing cards from James come in? Like, did that turn out better this time, or are you gonna go with?
I'm still waiting to hear from him today. I'm not sure yet. Okay. So if I don't hear from him either today or they don't, you know, turn out how I want them to, I'm just going to pull the trigger on using Primo Print. But yeah, I'm really excited about these. They turned out like the pins look awesome. They came out really good. So I'll bring them into the studio next time we're both in there at the same time.
I like Mega Man Legends, so I definitely want a set of this. Like,
yeah, for
so,
sure.
Like I thought the Spyro and Crash ones look good, but I don't have a lot of love for either of those things. Actually, I'm going to get my Kuba's been watching it. Skylander show.
Oh yeah.
So I'm gonna bring that one home and give it to him. But the I'm actually a big Mega Man fan. So like actually, great. Angelarium has got some shades of Mega Man in it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because like my first exposure to this kind of design, where like a character is supposed to embody a theme, the way I was talking about right at the front of this podcast, that is absolutely what the Mega Man bosses are. Like, the old school Mega Man bosses are like...
Totally.
Yeah, there's a robot that does fire. His name's Heat Man. He's hot. It's like, yeah. Well, what's hot? It's like, oh, it's a lighter. So it's a man made out of a lighter.
Yeah.
That's Angelarium at its core is just...
It's a really Japanese version of Angelarium.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up on that stuff. Like, I was looking through Nintendo Power books, like, poring over these illustrations of these Mega Man bosses and, like, absorbing this style of design when I was a little kid. And so this is, like, you know, I feel like I have to respect my roots when it comes to this stuff. That's one of the reasons why I'm, like, hyping this is because I love Mega Man, and Mega Man actually has, like, is a real influential part of Angelarium, which... Some people are instantly like Angelarium less, I think, because they're like, oh, this isn't like real mythology. This is some dumb nerd on the internet.
It's Mega Man.
It's like Mega Man. But no, I think there's something actually a lot deeper in there than people give it credit for.
Sure.
And, you know, that's what I want to get at. So cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pumped about these pins. I can't wait for these backing cards to get here so I can start selling these things.
Oh man, the details associated with... Oh, and we got restocks and all the mats in, yes, all the play mats in.
Oh yes, yeah, yesterday. Play mats are like super restocked. Yeah, we're good on play mats for a while.
Yeah, there were some people who had to sit around and wait for orders, and that was a bummer. And now that's not going to happen again for a long time because we're super stocked up on mats. And we got the new. We got a list Can you go ahead and list those open edition nats for Libra and Virgo?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Those are in. Scorpio ones are in too, which I wasn't expecting. Don't list those yet.
Okay, I just ordered them because I figured we may as well order them while we're here. So.
Yeah, and I did a source file. I did a limited edition version of Scorpio too. So, we should get the limited in for Libra and Scorpio. And
the limited edition Libra is like the coolest one so far. That one looks awesome. I'm excited to see that one printed out.
I'm excited to see both of them.
We're starting to get into the nitty gritty here.
Yeah, we're in the weeds, which I like. this is Angelarium stuff, but yeah.
Hi, Angelarium.
This is my experience. I want this podcast to be about my experience with Angelarium, which in some cases is me reformatting files and getting stuff back from the printer. And when you see me not, like, I didn't work on art a lot yesterday because I was, like, out at the vault. Matt, you weren't able to make it out, so I was filling in for the weekend orders and hand-packing everything for everyone and picking up playmats from the playmat factory and getting them all restocked up in our thing and dealing with the mountain of cardboard as a result of getting all those business done. So yeah. I'm really excited whenever anything like that happens. I used to do that all out of the basement here at my house, and now it's got its own warehouse space, which is infinitely nicer for everyone.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, I mean, like, being attached to that firsthand is I think, like, that's been an important part of this whole journey for me. So I like still getting my hands on it every once in a while. But I'd rather I'm more happy when 9 times out of 10 or 95 times out of 100, you're the one taking care of it.
Just poke in whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, poke in whenever I feel like I want to swagger around and pack some boxes and basically get out of there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us. Feel free to drop questions in the Discord with Elaine. If you ever need any help with any orders or want to ask questions or anything, hit up Matt Gerard over at morbacherart@gmail.com. Yep. And talk about art and what's happening with Angelarium every week on this podcast. It's going to be uploaded on Patreon only. The first one was open for the public, but from now on, I think I'm going to make them Patreon exclusive.
Ooh. So fancy.
Fancy. Thanks, guys. For indulging me and joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem.
No, absolutely.
I really thought this was going to be like 20 minutes. An hour.
It never is.
This thing's going to be an hour forever, isn't it?
It is. It's always going to be an hour, and some of them are going to be an hour and a half. Please welcome to the Angelarium. Oh, we can't work your areas and can't shut up.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Lots of love for you all.
Bye. See you guys.